All right, I'll call the meeting of the Agriculture, Rural Economies, Veterans Affairs Finance Committee to order. Representative Hygerton would move the minutes of Wednesday, March 12th. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye, opposed. Minutes are approved. Members, today we have a series of bills. A lot of them, or if not most of them, have been seen in other committees, but I think it's good that we at least briefly go through them as a finance committee. Laying out the schedule for you and others, we did get our targets yesterday. So we have a target for our five divisions that we have in here: Ag, Veterans, Board of Animal Health, AURI, all the divisions we have. We have one target. It's a positive target, okay? So we're going to be a little different than other committees. We get to spend a little money, and so that's a good thing. Everyone's breathing a sigh of relief, I know, on that. But what we're going to do is we'll hear bills today and tomorrow. If there's any of them, and tomorrow especially, there's some amendments, I know, for a number of the bills that we need to get them back in kind of the shape we want. And we'd like to get these bills as close to what we want to see in our omnibus bill next week. And so next week, I'm hoping when we come back from Easter break on Tuesday that our staff, who they're not going to take a break, all our staff is going to work really hard over the whole weekend. And we hope to have a bill put together. And then on Tuesday, we'll take a look at that. We'll lay it out. I assume, you know, and again, talking to Representative Finstead and all the members on this committee, I assume everyone wants a day to look at it and see if there's any amendments that need to be done. If you don't want a day, I mean, we can move it out that day, too. I guess I'll leave that up to the committee. But at this point, it's my intent to put the bill before us on Tuesday, come back Wednesday then and take it up and do any amendments or any discussion further on the bill. And we have to get it to finance, and they'll be putting the bills together on Thursday and Friday in finance. So that's where we're at. Again, we want to try and hear most of the bills today and tomorrow. If there's a couple we have to do on Tuesday, we'll do that too. We'll meet right after session because we're coming back at noon. So well, we can't really meet in the morning, and I don't want to rush anyone coming in. We can do that. All right, that's where we're at. Any questions to any of that? All right. I'm glad, Welty, you didn't have any questions. House File 3762, Representative Murphy is in the front row, anxiously awaiting discussion on this important bill. Welcome to the Agriculture and Veterans Affairs Committee. We like to see Twin Cities folks down here. We only have Hanson, and he's not even here today. I don't know where he's at.
So. I grew up in the corn country of Wisconsin, so I'm not.
Which town?
I was born in Columbus.
Is that where you went to high school?
No, went to high school in Janesville.
Wisconsin. Okay,
that's
very
right.
Good. Very good. All right. The chair will move House File 3762 and be recommended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3762 creates a Veterans Health Care Advisory Committee. This comes as a result of the Governor's Long-Term Care Commission on Veterans Health, and I understand that members of this committee heard of that commission in January at a joint meeting. The Veterans Health Care Advisory Committee will provide professional expertise and strategic advice to the Department of Veterans Affairs that now has the responsibility for the veterans' homes. They will be eligible for expenses only, not per diem, and I hope they're in your support.
So specifically to the money, is the department here? Can you come up? So basically, Representative Murphy, this is the group then that will replace internally the Veterans Homes Board as an advisory group only, though, not carrying out those functions. Is that your understanding?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
And to the department then, what do you foresee as cost to this? Or is that, I mean, you're carrying over starting July 1st, you've got all the budgets from Veterans Homes Board, you're assuming that that budget will translate into this?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Christine Steele, Department of Veterans Affairs. The short answer is yes to your question. However, we are still working out, since there isn't the committee appointed yet, how often they will meet. That's undetermined at this point in time.
Okay. My question would be, to you as the author, is there any legislative membership here?
Mr. Chair and members, at this time, there isn't legislative, there is not legislative seats on.
I guess my question to you and the department, if you want to chime in, again, what I always find, not necessarily, you know, at least as an ex officio member, it's good to have someone, probably from both sides of the aisle, the legislature sitting there, because they just help advocate when you get back here to the legislature. If they're having recommendations, if they're weighing in within the group, would you be open to that if we put this in the omnibus bill to maybe adding some language on that?
Mr. Chair and members, I think that that would be a very wise thing to do. One of the things that I think we learned during the course of the commission was that the Veterans Home Board had strong commitment to that, but they had maybe lost some of their way in terms of connection to this institution, and in part to the growing and changing nature of the delivery of long-term care. So the panel that is created here focuses on health care and professional expertise, and I think it would be wise to consider adding legislative seats.
And I think for staff, Jim's not here, is he? I don't know where he's at, but we take notes. We might want to even reference someone in the legislature with a healthcare background. You were a good example. You're a nurse background. You served on the task force. I just assume someone with that type of background be on those. If members don't have a problem with that, I think it's not necessarily someone from this committee, although, you know, I think there'll be opportunities to sit in. Representative Magnus?
Mr. Chairman, might be that we put in the designee of the chairman or designee. You could,
right.
Whoever's chair could
right.
figure out who that best person would be
right.
if we want to do that. But maybe we do that for the House and the Senate, one member each.
Yep, we will make that note. Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe not completely specific to this bill, but as we look through a lot of these agenda items today and going forward as we put together the finance omnibus, do we have fiscal notes? Thinking back, have we seen fiscal notes for any of these bills in this committee?
Always happen to have a staff member at the end of the table that can very efficiently answer that question. Mr. Reinhold.
Mr. Chairman, there are fiscal notes being put together on some of these bills. The bills have been moving very quickly this year, and as they've been amended also, I did check just yesterday, and about half these bills have notes in progress. There were just one, I believe, that was completed. So the answer really is no, we do not right now. Some of them are rather obvious and do not need them. It happens at this point in the committee deadlines and the way things are.
And Mr. Reynolds, I'd ask as they come that you'd make sure that not only me but the minority members and staff get those notes as they come down, if and when they come down.
Mr. Chairman, the system delivers them to you automatically as the chair of the committee if they've been ordered for the committee, and I will be certain that those that are not get delivered to you also.
Okay. Representative Finstead.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So specifically in reference to this bill, then, if I'm understanding this right, the fiscal note is just a big question mark because we're talking about expenses only, so we're just making some assumptions. Have you, as a department, sat down at all to tentatively say, you know what, we're just going to kind of earmark $100,000 for this or $50,000? I mean, there has to be some sort of fiscal process for us to understand what this bill may or may not cost us. And I guess what I'm trying to get to is that, you know, we pass this, it's a good piece, and then we come back next year into the next budget cycle and find out that, well, you know what, it cost us $150,000 because this committee decided to travel to so-and-so to discover some retreat opportunities, divine vision, and whatnot. So what do you have going on in your mind?
Mr. Chair, Representative Finstead, as of this point in time, we have reserved the old budget that the 9 board members received, which for a biennium was roughly, I don't remember the exact dollar amount, but it's roughly over $2 million. So we have not spent that or taken that money and given it to another fund. We've kept that, not knowing the composition of the board or how frequently we meet, but we have reserved that money to set aside. We don't anticipate that it'll cost that much, given that they're just getting paid for expenses, but we have kept that within our budget to move forward.
Representative Simpson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would hope that $2 million would be on the high end, unless you're serving caviar to these board members when they meet. But
we are adding a legislative member.
thank you, Mr. Chair.
No, and that's true. And then just to represent Finstead's point, committee members, these are some of the issues we're going to wrestle with next week and try and get a handle on. There are some dollars in all the departments that maybe are not encumbered at this point. We're trying to understand what they should be used for going forward. And, we may earmark, a couple thousand for the expenses here. So we do have a certain amount. And I think that's prudent, Representative Instead, so that they understand they have a budget to live by too. So, there may be some traveling with this group if they're visiting sites out state, and we expect them to maybe do that and get people familiar with the homes and the people out there and what we're looking at. So we'll see. We'll ask for some advice as we move forward on that too. Any other questions? All right, I will renew my motion that House File 3762 be recommended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Anyone, all those in favor, say aye. Aye. Opposed? You're under consideration. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members.
Next bill is Representative Conan, House File 3617, and I will move that bill again for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Conan, I see the first thing, as Representative Finstead said, on the back page there's a blank for the appropriation. You are in the Finance Committee now. Where is he? Oh, there he is. You are in the Finance Committee now, so we want to talk about finances. Keep your charts and graphs to a minimum, and let's get into the gist of what this costs and what we might or might not be buying if we go forward with this. Representative Conan.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. And yes, there is an open appropriation on this bill, and the cost. The bill talks about setting this demonstration project up in each of the five Minnesota veterans' homes. However, the cost per home would be about $25,000, so that's the kind of money we're talking about. I do have testifiers here who can speak further to the cost and also the economic benefits. So if it's okay with you, Mr. Chairman, we'll...
And Representative Conan, what I'd like to know from them, what does $25,000 per home buy specifically?
Mr. Chairman, Tom Spencer with Advanced Healing Systems, also working with Minnesota's nursing homes in the Wound Care Collaborative. Specifically, what it buys is training for doctors and nurses, technologies, preventative, diagnostic, and treatment. It buys software so that reporting can be done on outcomes, and it buys a guideline which integrates all of the care systems so that we get better compliance and better outcome reporting. That's what it specifically buys. It's a great value.
And my question, I have a couple of questions. Number one, have you discussed this with the Deputy Commissioner over at Veterans Affairs who oversees these homes?
Actually, we have. On two separate occasions, we've met with the Commissioner, Commissioner Acevedo. In one of those instances, we spent an hour with him, and he specifically asked our medical director, Dr. John Milkey, what's the value proposition? And so I'm going to paraphrase Dr. Milkey's response. The value proposition, Mr. Commissioner, is that we have a cure for a chronic disease, which, according to Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, costs Minnesota, just in the pressure ulcer category, about $217 million per year. Commissioner Acevedo then went on to say, well, what should we expect in our nursing homes? And he said, well, I can only tell you what's going on in the nursing homes we serve, and that is typically per 100 beds, we see 2 to 3 pressure ulcers per year. Those pressure ulcers are thought by CMS to cost about $40,000 apiece. So if you just prevent one, you've paid for the program. If you prevent two, obviously there are savings. So this is something that the commissioner went on at some depth or in depth with our medical director.
Um, the bill talks about a 3-year wound prevention and care formulary demonstration. The money is one time, so is it $25,000 per home if this moves forward? That's then for 3 years per home?
Yes, Mr. Commissioner.
The other question is, the bill is silent on it. I assume the department at the time, if again, we're you know, from this committee standpoint, I don't know if 25 is the right number, or 30, or 15, or 50. You're indicating 25 a home. I assume this would go out and on an RFP process. Is that Representative Conan or others' assumption that they would put out an RFP, and if there are providers, more than one, that do this, they would have the opportunity to bid on this demo project?
Well, Commissioner Junkie, I would...
I'm not Commissioner Junkie.
I'm sorry, Representative. Mr. Chairman. I would respectfully suggest that we would love to see Alina and Health Partners bid on the project. As a matter of fact, we'll make ourselves available to make the tools available to the care system so that they can bid on the project if they so choose.
Okay, so we want to make a note of that too. I don't know if it's specific in here, but if we do it, that we need RFP language in there. Anyone got a question? Who, Representative Simpson?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Coon, so at this point, just so we can get the bill, I guess, in a position or in a form that can allow this committee to decide if we're going to include it or not, are you willing for us to make an amendment to put on 2.28 $125,000 into the blank appropriation just so we can have a dollar amount for this bill as we move forward?
That's five homes times $25,000.
Yeah.
For now?
Yeah, for now. That's
Representative Finstead moves on line 2.28 after the dollar sign to insert $125,000. Any question to the Finstead amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's adopted. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for the testifier. Has this system ever been written up, and I think that I have the terminology right, the American Medical Association Journal, that I believe is published monthly, has it ever been written up in that?
A formulary representative is a combination of technologies and tools that are currently being used by medical providers. As a matter of fact, the main treatment technology in this formulary has been approved by the Veterans Administration hospitals. As a matter of fact, last year in Veterans Administration hospitals, the average daily census using the treatment technology here was about 166 veterans patients per day. So a formulary is really a new way of aggregating all of what we know and what we've learned. And we've aggregated it so well that, as Dr. Milkey pointed out, we've produced a cure. So the answer to your question is no. Medical journals have not talked about this formulary. What we're really talking about, Representative, is pay for performance. And as I had a chance to say to Representative Seifert last week, certainly for some parts of our constituents, we all ought to be behind pay for performance, because it's really focused on outcomes and cost reductions, not cost management. So we really believe, and we have 54 nursing homes that will be starting the formulary this year, and they're all doing it on the basis of hoped for cost reductions and improved patient care.
A doctor friend of mine tells me that he will not use or prescribe anything that has not been written up in the American Medical Journal.
Sure.
And so he basically claims that anything that has not been written up there is really experimental. And I guess I have a hard time using state money for something that a doctor would consider experimental. And so I don't think that we should be doing this.
Well, let me just point out one more fact, Representative. The technologies have all been written up in medical journals. The technologies have all achieved payment codes through the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid. What we're talking about is a new approach of combining technology and training, which causes an outcome to be had. So that's really the difference. We're talking about a different model of care delivery, which really goes to the basis and the promise of pay for performance.
Representative Fowler.
If I could, one last question. I'm not sure who would need to answer this question, but don't we have a system in place for the veterans' homes to buy equipment, to look at new procedures? I mean, you know, it seems to me that none of us on this board or on this committee are doctors. I find it hard to believe that we should be experts when we've got experts in every home that knows more than we do. And there must be a system in place other than this to come up with ways to purchase new stuff, to purchase what they need. And if somebody could explain what that is, I'd appreciate it.
And Representative Fowler, I know the department's here. I don't know if they have that specific answer. They don't. They don't have a deputy commissioner here today or staff members from the home side. But I guess I would request that the department weigh in with Representative Faust and our committee through my office, at least, again, as we prepare for bills next week. I want to know what your opinion is on it. Do you want to give this a shot at a home or two or five? You know, it's not a huge cost, but I agree that there must be some way to look at these alternatives, and I'm sure they've done that in the past, but I'd like our deputy commissioner to weigh in with us if he would. So they're nodding their head yes, they will have that done. Other questions? Oh, Representative Welty from Rochester, home of Mayo Clinic.
Thank you, Chair Jonesy. All right. Well, first question for the testifier is the 54 nursing homes that you mentioned, you're just starting the formulary in. Where are those 54 nursing homes located? In which states? You don't have to tell me each one, but kind of a general vicinity of where those are. And then I'd also like to know, have you made any inroads into any other state veteran care facilities?
Any of the testifiers want to answer that? Introduce yourself for the tape.
The 54 nursing homes that...
Could you introduce yourself
for the tape? I'm Kathy King. I'm an RN and I'm a director of nursing. And the 54 nursing homes that Tom referenced are in Minnesota. That's in addition to about 23 that are already currently using. I've used this in two different facilities over the past 4 years. And also the Advanced Healing, the company, has put the formulary into play in three other states to this point, but not in any other state veterans' home. This is the first.
Representative Welty.
Okay, thank you. And Ms. King, or to the other testifier, you mentioned that the dollars would be used for software so that we can report outcomes, and I am just wondering why the state of Minnesota should be financing software to report outcomes for a product that you are marketing to the nursing homes and to other facilities, and why you wouldn't already have numbers that you could bring before us or you could take to the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs and have them assess those numbers.
Ms. C.
Representative, the cost actually is not for the software. The cost is for bringing in the technology, which there are three different technologies that we use, and so that what everyone is paying for is a fee for the whole program. So necessarily, what we have is the technology for putting on what's called PEMF therapy, a silver product that we have, doing a test called an ABI or ankle brachial index, and then having someone come in and help with wound rounds and managing that and training the staff, and then being able to put the technology in place so that it will be able to roll up so that the management at the veterans' homes will be able to use that software in order to look at, view, and go back and evaluate what the outcomes are. So that's just one part of the program.
Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. From the home of the New Ulm Medical Center.
Very good.
with all due respect, I just want to touch on Representative Faust a little bit. You mentioned, the experts and the professionals in the healthcare world, and I guess I would just respectfully say that if we defer to them like we always have, we'll just continue to have this bankrupt, broken healthcare system that we do have. This idea may or may not work. What we're hearing is it is working. And I think for the cost and for the opportunity and the cost savings that are talked about, I think it's maybe, you know, maybe thinking outside of the box and maybe can be a part of healthcare reform. I know that's usually not what we talk about in this committee, but I think Representative Coonan should be applauded for bringing a new idea. It's not some of the same old that we've heard from the so-called experts in the world for years, and it's refreshing. Thank you.
I would point out Representative Vincent O'Tremba serve on our Human Services Committees, too, and have in the past, and so we're counting on them to weigh in, too, as we put this bill together on things like this. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. What do you have down where? What's in Mountain Lake?
And well, you know, the population of 2,000.
No,
we can
the vet clinic.
No. Yeah, so you'll be asking for one next.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. We can compete with Rochester Mayo.
You're
by
very
the way.
Good.
So, I'm just curious on the study. How many people, veterans, have agreed to participate in the study? And are we going to have control studies to go along with it?
Either the
thank you for the question, Representative. We're no longer studying. We're actually implementing through the collaborative. Again, all of the technologies are approved. So this is a different way. A formulary is just a fancy word for recipe. And what we've done is we've put a recipe together in a certain sequence with training of doctors and nurses so that admission sources, for example, at Hennepin County Medical Center, can understand what they're admitting to and not get in the way of healing. In fact, to go to Representative Finstead's comments, we're so down the line in terms of the complications of our system that we have to get together now and debate what a cure actually will do to reduce costs. So the key is we are getting better outcomes. We have already treated more than 700 residents of nursing homes in the state of Minnesota, and we have reference clients in Des Moines, Milwaukee, Chicago, and soon Lexington, Kentucky in the formulary. This is a very, very positive thing, and I think we should all be proud that Minnesota's long-term care industry has pioneered an answer to a problem which is vexing. It even vexes the Mayo Clinic.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for using the word study. I'll try to... How many people in the veterans' homes agreed to participate? What type of say do they have in this matter, whether they want to use this new technology or not? Have we even talked to anybody back at the veterans' homes? Do we have any type of idea of how many people are interested and willing to participate using the new technology?
Well, in a formulary, Representative, the way it works is that the medical director and the director of nursing at the facility make a determination that this is medical best practices and it goes in under standing orders. That way there's consistency, compliance, and communication so that the best practices get done and we get great outcomes. So, in other words, it has to be a decision between the commissioner and the medical leadership at the facilities. I would say if the medical leadership doesn't like the idea, it's not going in. So we've got to come with some pretty good outcomes to convince them that, in fact, they should do something new.
Representative, from a patient perspective, being on that side of the game, what's happened in the facilities that I have worked in with this technology is, of course, residents always have a choice. And the first thing is to make sure that you're educating the patient and letting them know what course of treatment. And the treatment that we use is you lay a wire or a coil over their wound for a half an hour a day. It's not invasive. They leave their clothes on, anything else that's there. And what happens, because most people have suffered with these wounds for a long period of time, with pain, various other kinds of things, immobility, within a week or two, they are the ones that are looking if you're late with that machine, because they are healing, they're getting better. And so they will be the ones that will make sure that the staff is doing it, making sure that the staff is on time with it, because it enhances the quality of their life. And so the patient part is the easiest cell that we have.
Representative Doty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this formulary adopted throughout an institution so that all residents would receive this, or is there a separate procedure if someone has already developed pressure sores or something like that?
Ms. King? Representative. Basically, what it is that the facility adopts the program, and what happens is that some components of the program obviously push for prevention so that people don't get pressure ulcers or any kind of ulcers. But if somebody does develop a pressure ulcer or comes into the facility with a pressure ulcer, then you just adopt a formulary so it's a circle. And you can get into that circle and you can put into that at any given point on the continuum.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, if we then were to go on the DHS website that compares all the detailed information from nursing homes, and we were to look up the number of people with pressure sores in institutions where your formulary is in place, and we compared that to others, what would we see?
Well, you'd probably see that there might be more, because what happens when you have the formulary in place is that this is where physicians send people with pressure ulcers. So, specifically in my facility, we have a 60-bed PCU, which is the largest PCU in Minnesota. We would have Hennepin County and any of the other wound clinics in the area would refer all of their wounds to us. So therefore, the numbers on the DHS website might look like there would be more pressure ulcers because that's what you're specializing in.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none. Chair removes his motion, renews his motion, House File 3617 as amended, be recommended for consideration in the omnibus bill. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
You are under consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee.
They're wealthy. I'm going to let you go here. Take over. Make it quick.
Hurry up. Railroad. Railroad is going to do it with me. Yeah.
Oh, it's a country.
All right, welcome to the committee,
Mr.
Representative Junkie.
I would move that House File 3763 be recommended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
All right. Well, Representative Duffy moves 3763 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
And you can see
Representative Junkie, you may proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, you can see I have been joined by the department here. Basically, this bill goes through the statutes and cleans up and deletes and does other things to change over from Veterans Homes Board, based on the governor's executive order, and moves us into the Veterans Affairs Department. As far as cost, I don't think there's any, but I guess I'd let them talk about that instance, or if you have any questions on the repealers or anything else in here, they can certainly address that too in nauseating detail, I'm sure.
Okay. Please introduce yourself for the record, and you may proceed.
Mr. Chair, again, for the record, Christine Field, Department of Veterans Affairs. At this time, we don't anticipate any cost to this particular bill, because like Representative Junkie stated, it is just transferring the authorities under our department, and we've already assumed their budget, so there should be no additional cost to this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Peel, and Representative Junkie, for the bill's introduction. Do any members have questions on this bill? Any questions on the bill? Any questions? Seeing no further questions, Representative Junkie. Well, first of all, I should ask, are there any members of the audience that wish to testify for or against the bill?
We don't allow that in this committee.
No.
Oh,
well,
fine.
I'm the chair now.
I see.
And by,
By the way, Representative Pinstead said if this bill takes too long, you'll start losing votes. So we're going to move right along. Seeing no members of the audience that wish to testify for or against the bill, Representative Junkie renews his motion that House File 3763 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed nay.
No.
All right, motion passes.
It took too long, Mr.
Congratulations, Representative Junkie, on moving your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Being laid over.
All right.
And another one. All right, Representative Junkie. Representative Hansen moves that House File 3749 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Junkie, you may proceed on House File 3749.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. What this is the State Veterans Cemetery Bill. Some of you have heard this in other committees. Basically, it allows us to work with the federal government and add a cemetery up in northeast Minnesota. Land is being exchanged with the Department of Natural Resources. I guess my caveat to this will put a tail into our budget, I believe, and the department can talk about that a little bit. I don't believe, and again I'll have them affirm, that there's any upfront cost for construction or land cost or establishment cost. I believe the federal government does all that, but then in our next budget, we're going to have to start showing through our fiscal staff and others a tail for maintenance of this. But I'd ask them to weigh in on the fiscal aspects of this.
Ms. Gill, you may proceed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gentry is correct. This bill, as it stands, has no fiscal impact, but into the tails it does. And we're anticipating that the federal government will approve this. So in 18 months, the construction is completely done by the federal government. There is no state cost for the construction of the cemetery, but there is the maintenance, which means our staff, because the federal government also pays for the veteran's burial. So it is the staff that will be in the tails to maintain it. The Little Falls home right now runs $375,000 a year for a staff of six. The cemetery around the Duluth area will not need a staff of six, because we will have the director from Little Falls and the administrator at Little Falls also oversee that cemetery. So we're looking at a staff of four for maintenance. We will not see the $375,000, but there will be tail costs into staff maintenance of the cemetery. And the land transfer is right now in Representative Gill's land transfer bill going forward throughout the session.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Gill. Are there any questions from the members? Any questions from the members? Seeing none, are there any members of the audience that wish to testify either for or against the bill? All right. Seeing none, Representative Hansen renews his motion that 3749 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay.
Thank you.
All right. Motion passes. And we'll now move on to Representative Otremba. Representative Otremba, would you please introduce your bill?
All right.
Representative Otremba moves that House File 3507 be considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Otremba, to your lengthy bill here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't hear what you said.
I said, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Did you put the? I was talking to Heidi.
We're ready to go.
Okay.
You've made the motion that you'd like this included in the possibly included in the omnibus bill.
Possibly.
Possibly. We'll decide that next week as a committee.
This House File 3507 is the bill that changes food laws administered in Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and I'm going to let Dr. Heidi Kassenborg go through the details.
Okay, please introduce yourself for the tape.
My name is Dr. Heidi Kassenberg. I'm the director of the Dairy and Food Division for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
Please proceed, Ms. Kassenberg.
This bill has a variety of mostly housekeeping changes to several statutes in the agricultural statute. I can go over them point by point, or do you want to just do the financial matters?
Well, I think some of them, if, for example, I think you should explain the first page why we're changing the definition of a vending machine, what's that about, anything that may come up on a subsequent committee or House floor discussion, I guess we'd like to be informed on it as much as possible.
Sure. To start out on Subdivision 10, vending machine, we're changing, we seek to change the definition of a vending machine from coin-operated to those with credit cards, because that technology is starting to become adopted. As far as...
this is just simply the machines now that you stick your debit card or credit card in, that's all that's being changed here, nothing else.
That's correct.
All right.
The next, 2.2, if a firm is found to be operating for multiple years without paying licensing fees, the state may collect the appropriate fees and penalties for each year of operation. That's clarifying what's already in place. Then for multiple points in the next section, there was a, we missed in previous, when this was adopted earlier, it should say sales or service for each of those, and some of those subsections, or service, was mistakenly left off. So we're seeking to put that in those sections. And moving to page 7.38, we're seeking the authority for the Commission of Agriculture to waive plan review fees for facilities that are in a disaster area. As an example, in southeastern Minnesota, there were several food facilities that had significant impact such that they needed to have remodeling. And those remodeling plans need to be approved by our department so that they will be serving safe food for those with that equipment. And they're charged for that. And what we'd like to do, because they're suffering under a disaster already, we would like the authority to waive those fees for those impacted facilities.
And Ms. Kassenberg, what are those fees now?
It depends on the situation, but for instance, in southeastern Minnesota, there were three facilities and it was $300 a fee.
And there's really no fiscal note adjustment at this point. It's minor at this stage of the game, or should our fiscal staff be creating some sort of a debit?
It's difficult to predict as far as when a disaster is going to occur. Some years we wouldn't have any. So, but if there was a large town, of course, then we would have multiple facilities that would have to have plan review fees conducted.
Okay.
Then, starting in 7.41, we're striking coin-operated to food vending machines so that it matches the previous definition. And then in, starting on section 8, or line 8.8, subsection B, we're defining water dispensing machines. Those machines are those when you go into the grocery store and you either bring in your container or there's containers there to get water. We do not consider those vending machines because and they would fall under our, when we inspect, we would consider that to be part of the facilities inspection rather than charging a separate fee for those devices. We consider those to be more of a device rather than a vending machine.
So this will not require then another inspection. This will
correct. It's a part of the inspection process. Yep.
Okay.
The next change is under subdivision 2, under equipment, starting on line 8.3. This strikes grandfathered equipment that we were wanting any equipment that was in place before 1991 that did not comply to standards was grandfathered in. By now, those machines are over a decade old, decade and a half old, and they should be retiring at this point.
Representative Heigerson has a question.
Thank you. Yeah, in regard to that, on the cleaning of eggs, whether I don't think most people here realize, I think that we got three of the five top egg laying processing centers in the state of Minnesota. I think Sparville's number four, and I think McKean is number three, and the top two are out of state, I know. But my question here is, I know that there used to be a grocery store in our town used to create eggs, and I remember them doing that. Will this affect any of the small little egg laying businesses?
Ms. Castleberg. Castleberg.
Chairman Junkie, Representative Heinegerken, those facilities, there's very few in number now, and this equipment, they should have already have, in most cases, they've already should have upgraded. I mean, this, we're talking about equipment that's already 15 years old and doesn't comply with current food safety standards. So the impact should be very minimal.
Representative Iger.
I'd like, for example, I get the eggs on my restaurant from Pease, I think I represent Doty's district. And I know that he's kind of, his family kind of runs the business. If a small little company would have to come into compliance with this, how much would the cost be?
Ms. Katzenberg.
Would it put them out of business?
Representative Heidegger King, Chairman Junkie, it would, in my estimation, it would not put them out of business. At this point, if they're in business to that extent, they would be able to handle these costs.
Representative Heidegger.
Do you have any idea, and I have never been over to Lyle's place, but how much does one of these greeting machines cost? Do you have any idea? I mean, we're 1991, I'm sorry, in agriculture, it's not that old. I mean, I've got a lot of little dairy farms and everything else that are operating on their barns that are built back in 1930 and 40, and they've done some remodeling it, but I'm sure that there's a lot of things in a lot of these operations that are going to, 1991 seems to be pretty recent to me. I've got machines in my restaurant that are older than that.
And Ms. Castleberg, Representative Trumba, I think what Representative Heigerson's getting at, and it's a good question, is, we have a lot of organic and smaller producers mm-hmm. that are now maybe selling at our farmers markets mm-hmm. or are even selling locally in some of our co-ops and our stores who mm-hmm. may have picked up some of this equipment along the line, not only from Minnesota, but other states, auctions and other things. We see this stuff show up, and if they're using that, I guess his question is, and now all of a sudden this equipment doesn't really meet the handling and other requirements for modern sale, what would that cost someone like that, and why is this necessary? I guess we're trying to cut to the chase here.
Chairman Dunphy, Representative Heinegerken. One of the things that says in there is equipment that equipment has to be in use before 1991. And if there's equipment that is older than that and conforms to those standards, we're not telling them that they have to get rid of that. The only stuff that was grandfathered in prior to this was the equipment that did not make standards. So older equipment, as long as it functions well, we're fine with that.
Representative Tremba.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. This was a question I did have while we were going through the bill, because I know that from my background that eggs were always at 45 and not 41, and so I'd ask why they were going down to 41, and I don't know if I really got an answer. because eggs can be, as a home ecky, I know that eggs could be put in at 4:45, so I never really got an answer.
Tim and Dunkey?
Ms. Katzenberg.
The reason for changing that is to have it comply and be uniform amongst federal food codes and other state codes. So it's a harmonization of those requirements.
And Mr.
Chair,
I think it probably is just so they can all have the same degrees with all the other food in the trucks is probably what it is, but I know that eggs can be at 4:45.
Well, I guess we'll leave it up to you, Representative Tremba. We don't have to do anything with it now. If you want to leave that language alone when we put the bill together, come see staff or us before next week, and we'll do whatever you wish. You're the author.
Well, we'll continue with the bill.
All right. Continue, please.
It's line 9.7. We're defining that shell eggs that have been frozen must not be offered for sale. Eggs that have been frozen can have microscopic cracks in them that you aren't able to see, and that can allow bacteria to come into the egg. So that's the reasoning for that.
Okay, we're getting near the end.
Embargoes and condemnations, 9.14. The reason for this section is to add the ability of for the Commission of Agriculture to embargo animals that have been contaminated with chemicals. For instance, we have occasions to have animals that are contaminated with lead that survive the lead poisoning, but if those animals were to go to market, those portions of that animal can be very harmful to humans, and we have no ability to keep those animals out of the human food chain. Another larger example happened this spring, past spring, with the melamine situation, where there were some animals that were contaminated with melamine. They were consuming melamine from waste pet food, and this happened with hogs and poultry, not in Minnesota, but in other states. Fortunately, we did not weren't faced with that issue of keeping those animals out of the food system, but if we had, we would not, there would have been a gap in statutory authority between us and the Board of Animal Health. The Board of Animal Health has authority for animals regarding diseases that affect the animals. But if the condition does not affect the health of the animal or the health of the rest of livestock in Minnesota, the Board of Animal Health does not have any authority. So we're seeking to add this.
All right. I think you can move to the last page. There's just a couple of things.
On the last one.
Wait a minute. Representative Szymanski wants to ask you a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Katzenberg, I happened to be at the Senate hearing when we talked about this provision. The question came up on line 9.18. It references horses and equines.
Oh, yes.
And I know we struck one of those critters out of that bill. Could you remind us of what?
Yeah, Chairman Duncan, Representative Szymanski, this was copied from other statutes, and it's actually redundant, horses and equines, so we can remove horses.
Representative Szymanski moves that on line 9.18, the word horses, comma, whatever it takes, is removed. Stricken as redundant. Any questions to the Szymanski amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Adopted.
Then
the last page.
Then we go to 11.2. We want to strike venereal disease because it's no longer scientific. Venereal disease in food handling is not transmitted. So you want to strike that.
Okay.
Then the next section, water, plumbing, and sewage.
these need to be updated in order to comply with other changes in other statutes, because it's gone to the Department of Labor and Industry, and so we want to make sure that our rules are consistent with those with health, and those also with Department of Labor and Industry. And then finally, the somatic cell count for goat milk. We're seeking to allow somatic cell counts for raw milk to be, for manufacturing grade, is 1.5 million cells per milliliter. Currently, we adopt by reference Agricultural Marketing Services standards of 1 million. And those standards, unlike those for fluid milk, are optional. So because this is a small industry, that's the reasoning for increasing us to 1.5 million cells.
Okay. And Mr. Chair. Representative Heidrichsen.
So, yes, and now 11.21, so you're increasing it, is what you said. Okay. Before the bill goes forth, I still would like to make an oral amendment that we on line 8.32 through line 8.35, we keep the language there in place, as well as 9.6 until 9.7, until we can find out, you know, if there's 5-6 people going to go out of business because of that, I most certainly don't want this bill going forth. I think we need to hear from the folks that are in this business, and I will do some checking at the same time.
Representative Heiger can move that on lines 8.32 to lines 8.35, the stricken language is reinstated, and on lines 9.6 and 9.7, the stricken language is reinserted. Questions or comments to that amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Magnus.
Is this bill up for possible inclusion?
Yes. So we do have a week to redo things if Representative Heiger can get the answers or whatnot.
At the same time,
Representative Heiger,
at the same time, they can do some checking as well.
Yep.
I just don't want to see 5-6 people, and I just thought Representative Paulus do the same way, going out of business because of this.
Okay. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Heigerken oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye. Amendment's adopted. Any other questions to the bill? If not, Representative Tremba renews her motion that House File 3507, as amended, be recommended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? You're under inclusion, Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
All right. New sheriff is now.
See no further business? Representative Junkie, welcome to your committee. You move House File 3552. Be recommended for possible inclusion in your omnibus bill. Representative Junkie. I do, Mr. Chair, and this bill is basically the Next Gen Energy Board bill. Representative Magnus and I and Hilty in the House sit on that committee. You all got a report a couple of weeks ago from them, and these are some of the recommendations within that. Basically, the fiscal thing in the 3552 is that it extends. We have $3 million appropriation, and the bill last year in our omnibus bill inadvertently, frankly, said that it was available only the first year of the biennium. This simply allows that to be available the second year of the biennium. There's also two other provisions that are policy provisions in here. One adds a forest products representative, and the other one just deletes the, the sunset, I believe, is deleted in here. And that's the bill, Mr. Chair. Any questions for Representative Junkie?
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me how many people are currently on the NextGen board?
Oh, man.
Representative Junkie.
That's a good question. Basically, it's a board. We established it last year. I can't think of the exact numbers, but there's four or five commissioners. There's six legislators. There's members from business, environmental groups. I want to say, I don't know the exact number.
15 to 20.
Probably closer to 20.
I think it's 18.
How many? 19. I was right. It was closer to 20. There's 19 members, according to the Department of Agriculture.
Any other discussion or questions for Representative Junkie? Seeing none, Representative Junkie will renew his motion that House File 3552 be laid over for possible inclusion in his omnibus bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion passes. Representative Junkie moves House File 3362 be recommended to pass and be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Junkie.
Okay, I just got to figure out which one I'm on here. This is the Embers 3362 is what's called, I believe, the bad actor. Is that what we're calling it? Bad actor bill. And basically, it just says that if someone's had something happened to their license or in another state, it'll basically carry over to this state as we do licensing. I've got Department of Ag here that can probably give you a quick synopsis of the bill.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Paul Lemont, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. The bill is just as described to you. We have had occasion where persons from other states, unbeknownst to us, have made application for licensing or permits, and we have found out after the fact that we shouldn't have licensed them. Or we occasionally will be contacted by another state colleague saying, you can expect somebody to be knocking at your door and making application for a license. We just suspended there. And then we don't have any clear authority to say no. And this would give us that authority.
All right, members, any questions or discussion on this bill? Representative Heigerson.
Thank you, Mr. Lamont. I think you and I have conversed in the past over, I think, with some formaldehyde issues, among others. Now, this is just this bill itself has to do with companies coming from another state, right?
Mr. Lamont.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is correct.
Okay. Any further questions or discussions? Seeing no further questions, Representative Junkie renews his motion that House File 3362 be recommended passed and be laid over for possible inclusion in his omnibus bill. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion adopted. Congratulations, Representative Junkie. Now to your last one. Representative Junkie moves House File 3902 be recommended to pass and be laid over for possible inclusion in his omnibus bill. Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Remember, two things with this bill. Basically, if you look on page 3, what it's doing again is making this money available in the second year of the biennium if it's not encumbered in the first. And probably more importantly, this is the bill that will become the vehicle for our omnibus bill, which is why you see the chairs of the policy and finance committees, as well as the Veterans Affairs Committee, as authors of this. So this is your bill, Mr. Chair, too.
See no questions? No. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, Representative Junkie renews his motion that House File 3902 be led over for possible inclusion to be the omnibus bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Junkie, Mr. Chair, do you have any further announcements?
I do not.
All right, seeing no further business, this committee is adjourned.